නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Friends, this afternoon I want to give a short Dhamma talk on meditation, on our practice. Can you all hear me? Okay, good. We are practicing meditation. Particularly Vipassana meditation. You all know the meaning of Vipassana. Vipassana means seeing things from various angles, in various ways, and also seeing things in a very special way. We means very special or various variety of ways. Now, normally we see things from various angles, from various ways, but in meditation we see things in a very special way, in a way that not ordinarily people see things. People see something impermanent as permanent, something unsatisfactory as satisfactory, something not self as self, right? Something neither pleasant nor unpleasant, but something pleasant. They think they are pleasant, but actually they are neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And yet we have what we call distorted perception. Because of our distortion, we think, it is our thinking, that something is pleasant or ugly. Things are neither pleasant nor ugly, but things are as they are. There is a special meditation, some people call it, I particularly don't like this term, because that gives very unpleasant negative connotation. Therefore, that translation in English or in any other, particularly in even Sinhalese, I don't like it. But when you look at the real deep meaning of what Buddha meant, the meaning is completely, totally going against the Buddha's teaching. That is why I don't like the term. So, people coin these terms with their own distorted perception and make people even confused. In Vipassana meditation, friend, there are a lot of things to say about Vipassana meditation, but our time is so short, and we had to be very specific and brief to make the best use of the short time. Okay, why we meditate? We all must understand why we meditate. Some people say just to relax, be peaceful, be happy, and live harmoniously, and so forth. Of course, these are also benefits, what I call fringe benefits, not the deep, real purpose. There are five purposes. Purpose number one, it is given in the very outset of Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the long discourse on the establishment of mindfulness. In that discourse, there are several discourses. One is called establishment of mindfulness discourse, and the other is called long discourse on establishment of mindfulness. In both, Buddha has given the fivefold purpose of meditation, especially vipassana meditation. Once we remember this fivefold purpose, we will be on right track. Otherwise, we will go off the track. So, before we start meditation, we must understand how to stay on the track. To stay on the track, we must remember the purpose of meditation. This fivefold purpose. This fivefold purpose is unique to the Buddha's own teaching. And therefore, it is called Ekayana Magga. Ekayana Magga means, some people call lonely path, some people call one path, some people, because they don't like to give the specific, direct, correct, proper Buddhist meaning. They have something in the mind. If they say the truth, people might misunderstand. People might not come for meditation at all after that, because they don't like to speak the truth. They want to use some euphemistic terms and cover the true meaning. The Buddha's teaching is the teaching that speaks the truth. The truth, Buddha said, sabbang rasang dhamma rasang jinati. Satchang have sadhu tarang rasanang. Among the tastiest is the truth. Among all the tastes, the tastiest is the truth. That is not what normally people hear. They hear truth is bitter, or bitter truth, right? Since the truth is bitter, who likes to listen to it? Who likes to talk about it? So they use all kind of euphemistic terms just to please the audience. They like to say what you want to hear. They don't like to say what the truth is. So, since because of this fivefold purpose, Buddha said this is the only path. When people say only path, what about such and such a path? What about such and such a path? There are so many paths. So Buddha said, true, there are so many paths. Nibbana path is one, Sangsara path is another. Anyahi labhu pinasa anya nibbana gamini. One path is to gain honor and respect and live in sangsara, collecting all kind of sangsaric garbage. Another path is to get rid of all these things and go to liberation. There's a path to go to heaven. All you have to do only three things to go to heaven. Satcham bhane, nakujjaya, दज्जा पश्चिम विजाचितु एते ही चीताने गच्छे देवान सांतिके. यू हैव टू डू ओनली थ्री थिंग्स टू गो टू हेवन. व्हाट आर दे? सच्चम भने, स्पीक द ट्रूथ. न कुछ जेय, डोंट गेट एंग्री. दज्जा पश्चिम विजाचितु, इफ समबडी आस्क, गिव व्हाट एवर यू कैन. When you practice these three things, you can go to heaven. Who cannot do that? Mm-hmm. Buddhist can do it, Christian can do it, Muslims can do it, Hindu can do it, Jewish people can do it, Zoroastrian can do it, Baha'is can do it, even communists can do it. They can speak the truth if they want. They can stay without getting angry if they want. Anybody can give whatever, you know, they like to share with other people, because the giver enjoys the gift more than the recipients. So the giver likes to enjoy giving. So anybody can do it. By doing these three things, gacche devan santike, go to the vicinity of the divine beings. That is one path. When the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, was renouncing the world, Mara came to Siddhartha Gautama Bodhisattva and said, why do you want to give up this luxurious, palacious pleasure? Why do you want to stay home? You can give practice dana, you can practice morality, you can live a very whole, holy, noble life, you can be the king, you can have your wife and child, have palace, enjoy. Why you want to give up? So, if Siddhartha decided to do that, he would have gone to heaven just like even faster than anybody else. So that is one path. Anya Nibbana Gamini. The path to liberation is another. And that is the path Buddha taught us. And therefore it is called Ekayana Magga. The direct, only path. That direct only path is the path of mindfulness. Friends, nobody goes wrong if they live mindfully. Why we make all these mistakes? Because we were unmindful. Why we suffer? Because we are unmindful. So, there are fivefold purpose of this mindfulness practice. One, sattanang visuddhya. I think all Buddhists who know this discourse called satipatthana, they know why we meditate. For the purification of mind. Purification of mind. Our mind has a lot of garbage collected for long time in samsara. This whole practice called meditation, cultivation, or bhavana in Pali. Bhavana means cultivation, cultivating the mind. When you cultivate, what do you do? The first thing, you go to cut down trees, remove big rocks, remove roots, remove weed, and prepare the land, till the land, fertilize it, water it, and plant the seed. So the first thing you got to do is to remove all these harmful things that hurt the plants that you grow. Exactly the same way when we meditate, we have to remove this garbage from our mind. Now when we say this, you might think, well, how long it will take to remove this garbage? And let me finish first. Let me remove all these, what we call, psychic irritants, clean the mind, and sit one day, practice meditation, attain enlightenment, and kaput, finish. That person will never meditate. He is like one who goes to the seashore and wait for the sea to become calm so that he can swim. This fellow will never swim. Why? Sea never becomes calm. While sea is rough with lot of waves and ripples and so forth, he has to jump in and start swimming. You got to go to the water to swim. You cannot swim on the land. You see? So, you got to start. With all these things in our mind, we got to start. And we practice. And we don't wait until the mind is clean and pure to practice meditation. The beauty is, while we are meditating, mind becomes clean. Because when we meditate, we begin to see our difficulties. When we cannot gain concentration, we have to find out why I cannot gain concentration. I find the reason and try to remedy that. With the impure, unclean state of mind, if we speak or think or act, the results follow us like the cart that follows the foot or the ox that pulls the cart. This is a very beautiful simile Buddha has given in the first stanza of the Dhammapada. You remember that? Dhammapada? The first stanza. And that is where our mindfulness begins, our purification of mind begins. This, I like this simile very much. Why? When the ox pulls the cart, ox does not choose to pull the cart. That is not his choice. Most of you have not seen ox pulling cart, have you? No. You drive or fly bicycle. You never see a bull pulling a cart. You must go to less developed country. Even today you can see oxen pulling carts. And the cart is not empty cart. It is full of merchandise. The road that ox pulls the cart is not a paved road. It's a rough, rugged, ups, dips and bumps, up and down, hilly, winding road. The driver is not a very compassionate person. He is under pressure. He wants to deliver this merchandise to a certain point and come back and get another cart load of merchandise. So he has to beat the bull, curse him, kick him, to hurry up to bring the merchandise, carry the merchandise. So this poor bull is tied to the yoke. He cannot escape. You got to get the beating, scolding, cursing, kicking, dragging this cart full of merchandise on the rough, rugged road, uphill, downhill, and so forth. Our mind is like that. When the mind is full of impurities, unclean states, we live a very, very difficult life. If somebody asks you, how are you? I'm just pulling on. Because so many things we carry. Life is very heavy, full of burden. So we want to lay down this burden. One who attains enlightenment is called Ohita Bhara. Bhara is barrow, the weight. Bhara. Ohita Bhara means one who laid down the burden. We want to lay down this burden and go free. In order to do that, we have to purify the mind. And that is the purpose, one purpose of meditation. Not just superficial, temporary relaxing and just, you know, feeling comfortable and so forth. These are all very trivial benefit. I call fringe benefit. So, second purpose is to soka pariddhavana samatikkamaya, to overcome sorrow and lamentation. Friends, it is very interesting why we sorrow, why we lament. Very simple, because we have very great powerful attachment to something. Attachment to something. What is that something? A person, place, situation, positions, our own body, feeling, perceptions, thought, volitional formations, consciousness. These are the things we attach to. We, when we say we suffer because of our attachment to these things, then people might wonder, how can we live without attachment, without clinging attachment, how can we live? We cannot live. Ordinarily, we cannot. We have a great deal of attachment. But actually, we can live without attachment. I was touching this morning one very important point. I said that I would elaborate it during my Dhamma talk. I think I have come to that point now. That point is, what are we attached to? We are attached to something which is impermanent. Which is impermanent. This impermanence is almost common sense things. Almost everybody knows it. We talk about the pre-Socratic philosopher called Heraclitus, who is known for talking about impermanence, and it was he who said that one man cannot step into the same river twice. And when we look at the Buddha's teaching, we can see not only one man cannot step into the same river twice, but not the same man cannot step into the same river, to the same river twice, because we are changing so fast, so quickly. So, philosophers think that things are impermanent, and psychologists think things are impermanent. Even scientists know from their experiments in a science laboratory that things are impermanent. You take a little piece of, drop of blood and put under a microscope and see everything changing. Every subatomic particle is changing so quickly that you hardly can see something existing, because they are changing so fast. And mathematicians, sometimes one day when I was having a, when going for a walk with a very great mathematician, he, whenever we meet, we discuss Dhamma. I said, everything is impermanent. He said, Bhante, I don't think mathematics is impermanent. I began to think about it. That time I became speechless. I did not know how to respond to it. I was thinking about it. One day, I thought, gee, where does mathematics exist? Does it exist by itself? There has to be objects to work with to make mathematics any sense. There has to be objects. If there are no objects, where does mathematics work? But objects in the whole universe are changing, impermanent. This sun that has been giving us energy for the last 5 billion years is burning its helium millions of tons every second, and for maybe another 5 billion years it will go on burning, giving energy, light and so forth, and then exhaust, and then it becomes dark, another planet, another dead star. And after some many more years, it disintegrates and disappears. So everything is impermanent. One day when I came to Washington, one of my friends, an American, brought a little child. He was only 10 days old, and this little baby grew up in Washington. We had every day this professor, he's a professor, every day he came with this little baby, put him in a little crib and was reading. And this little baby grew up, and when he was crawling, he came to me and lifted his arms for me to lift him. So I lifted and put on my lap, and I was playing, and this child grew up like my own child. When he was 10 years, wherever I went and returned, he would come and hug me saying, "My sadhu, my sadhu, my sadhu." So one day when he was 10 years old, he grew quite big, he tried to come and hug me, and I said, "Michael, you are so big now, unhuggable." He said, "Bhante, let us face facts. Everything is impermanent." Even this little child knew what impermanence is. Now, philosophers knew what impermanence is. Psychologists, scientists, mathematicians, even this little child. But what have they done with this knowledge? I have never heard or read anything that Heraclitus wrote or did with this knowledge of impermanence. Nothing. Buddha is the only one who not only discovered it even before him, independent of him anyway, that everything is impermanent, and he is the only one who used it to build up his entire truth, Dhamma. And he said, Upadava bhikkhu tathagatanam anupadava tathagatanam thitava sadhatu dhamma titata dhamma niyamata sabbe sankhara anicchati tan tathagato abhisambujyati abhisameti abhisambujyitva abhisamitva achikati deseti panyapeti patthapeti vivarati vibhajati uttani karoti. Let me tell you the meaning. Because whether the Buddhas come into existence or not, this established Dhamma, these elements of Dhamma exist. What is this established Dhamma? Element of Dhamma, truth of Dhamma, that all conditioned things are impermanent. And that Buddha understood, realized, penetrated. Having understood, realized, penetrated, he taught, explained, expounded, described and told the world that everything is impermanent. So we have to work with every impermanent thing. Now, when we try to cling to something, there is an assumption that what we are trying to cling to is permanent. Right? When you try to grab hold on to something, when you try to grab, you assume that it must stay there for you to grab. But when it is moving away, slipping away, how can you grab it? Every attempt we make to grab something permanent, we never find that permanent thing. And since everything is impermanent, our attempt is a futile attempt. When we do something, when we try to hold on to something which is impermanent, disappearing, we end up in frustration. That is what is called suffering. You just imagine how many things in our life we try to keep, we try to hold on to. We may physically touch something, hold on to something for very short period of time, but how can we hold on to it? We will experience a great deal of pain. You hold on to this cup very tight, how long you can do that? Not too long, because you experience a great deal of pain. Because of the impermanent nature of your body. And this also is impermanent. So mentally, when we practice mindfulness meditation, we see things are slipping away, disappearing all the time. Our clinging, craving, attachment is a mental factor. It is with the mind we try to hold on to this impermanent object. So when we practice Vipassana meditation, we see this reality and we use whatever we use, understanding, knowing, realizing that this particular thing that we are using is changing, is impermanent. This experience of pleasure is impermanent. This experience of pain is impermanent. This experience of neutral feeling is impermanent. So, when we see this reality, our attempt to glue to something mentally will slowly fade away. But we know how to use it. We know how to use it without clinging. And we make the use of that object without clinging. So the Buddha said, this body, this feeling, our perceptions, our volitional formations, consciousness exists for us to gain this knowledge and insight. Attikāyoti vāpanasa sati pachupattita hoti yāvadeva jñāna mattāya patissati mattāya anisitochi viharati. This body that goes along with the feeling, perception, thoughts, consciousness exists for us to gain knowledge and insight. These five things do not exist for us to cling to because we cannot cling to them. So we learn to gain this insight. And then when we use these experiences with this awareness, this understanding, our greed, resentment, anger, hatred, our delusion slowly fades away. As they are fading away, insight arises. Insight arises to use this body, feeling and so forth exactly as they are, and we continue to develop our insight and remove this what we call psychic irritants gradually from our mind, and we become free from sorrow and lamentation. We have sorrow and lamentation because of our attachment to whatever is impermanent is unsatisfactory. That is very true. Yadanichyam tan dukkham. Whatever is impermanent, it is unsatisfactory. Not because of it is, because it is impermanent, things are unsatisfactory. Not because impermanent, but because of our attachment to impermanent things, we experience unsatisfactoriness. If impermanence itself is unsatisfactory, then even after attaining enlightenment, even the Buddhas would have unsatisfactoriness and pain and sorrow and lamentation. Why? Even after attainment of enlightenment, things continue to be impermanent. As Buddha said, impermanent exists whether the Buddhas come into existence or not. Impermanence exists. Things are permanently impermanent. What is permanent? That is impermanent. So, impermanent is permanently impermanent, whether the Buddhas come into existence or not. So, if the impermanent itself is suffering, then even after attainment of enlightenment, one would suffer. How they liberated from suffering is let him, they know, they understand, they gain insight, and then they let impermanent things to be impermanent, but they don't become attached to impermanent things. So we learn to separate ourselves from the attachment to impermanent things through the practice of mindfulness. Then, third is dukkha domanasana attangama. Dukkha is suffering, domanasa means anger, hatred. Friends, when our loved one pass away, why we cry? We cry because we have lost something we are so closely attached to. We have been mentally, psychologically, we have been clinging to that individual. We remember the conversation we had, the feeling we had, and the touch we had, and the comfort we had, and so forth and so on with that person. And we experience all these things and enjoy all these things. While enjoying them, we never thought that this is impermanent. We enjoy all kind of pleasures of having someone, something, we have pleasure. But we never realize this is going to change. So, Buddha said, one who enjoys pleasure enjoys pain. It sounds very contradictory. Yo sukhang abhinandati, so dukkhang abhinandati. It's a very beautiful statement. One who enjoys pleasure enjoys pain. We don't want to enjoy pain, nobody enjoys pain, but we do enjoy. It is what I call you buy one, get one free. You work very hard to buy. And the one that is free also sneaks into it, into the same package. So you have to buy the whole package. You cannot say no, no. Suffering should not come with this pleasure. Let the suffering be away and have pleasure alone, separate. You cannot separate these two. These two go together. So Buddha was so enlightened, he said, how is that? How pain or displeasure, disappointment comes along with pleasure? I tell you one example. Suppose at night you go to bed. As soon as you put your head on the pillow, you remember in the refrigerator there was a very tasty, sweet, juicy, the best kind of cake on earth in the refrigerator. You love this. You love this cake. The very thought that thought of cake appears in your mind, your mouth begins to water. Can you sleep? You cannot sleep. See how painful this desire, greed is. The very thought of this cake, the very desire that arose in your mind, itself is painful. That's why you cannot sleep. Then you think, oh, then you become, I have a very special word for you, for that person, special name. Do you know that? No. That person is called vegetarian. Vegetarian is the one who in the middle of the night very quietly tiptoed to the kitchen, open the refrigerator, get that piece of cake, and eat. That's a vegetarian. So you become vegetarian, go to the kitchen, eat the piece of cake, and come back. You think you have satisfied your desire. Come back and you try to sleep. Can you sleep with all sugar in your body? So, to satisfy your pain of desire, you went and ate it. Then you have more pain. So that pleasure came with pain. The desire, so Buddha is very, very wise. You can think, well, this taste is impermanent. I had cakes many times in my life. I can sleep without the cake. You can let go of that, because in the past you ate cake thousands of times, taste was good, and it disappeared. And you had to repeat it again. That is the nature of desire. That is why Buddha called desire Pono Bhavika Nandiraga Sagata Tatra Tatra Abhinandini. Pono Bhavika means it repeats. Repeats. You satisfy, and then afterward, when you satisfy, you think, enough, I don't want. Again, 2 hours later, 2 days later, three, you eat that, and you have it. It is insatiable. Greed is insatiable. Craving is insatiable. Wanting is insatiable. We can never ever satisfy it. Suppose you have a house. House is so big, bigger than all this building complex here. You have such a huge house. And you go to bed. That night, there was a heavy rain. Every drop of rain was gold. And when you wake up next morning, you find your entire house is full of gold. The gold is so much, you cannot finish it even 100 or 1,000 generations. If you were to, when you are reborn, you can be reborn thousands of times and still you cannot consume all this gold. so much gold, so huge house full of gold. So next morning you wake up and see all this gold, and you know this gold you cannot finish in 100 generation or 1,000 lives. And yet you think, gee, how nice if I had a bigger house. That is the nature of greed. You want, no matter how many thousands of people suffer around your neighborhood, starving to death, no medicine, no food, sick, no clothes, no living facilities, nothing. They're just like animals. But you want to collect. You want to build a bigger house, bigger car, bigger TV, bigger this, bigger that, airplanes, yachts, and this and that. You build up, build up, build up. It doesn't matter how many millions of other people die of starvation, you correct. That is the nature of desire. You can never ever satisfy. The bigger the desire, the more suffering. Desire never makes you happy. Never. What do you desire for? Impermanent things. How long can we enjoy? How long? There is a limit. Beyond that we cannot enjoy. And for that short period of enjoyment, we build up so much desire, clinging, craving. So when we meditate, we begin to see this reality and try to minimize our greed, our clinging, our craving. This is how we learn to purify the mind. Not by trying to feed our greed. Then the fourth purpose of meditation, see how lofty these purposes are. Fourth purpose of meditation is to tread the path leading to liberation. Nyayasa adhigamaya. Nyaya means the method or system. Adhigamaya means realizing. Realizing the system, the method or way for attaining liberation. That's the fourth purpose. How can we realize it? Mindfulness meditation is the seventh step of the Noble Eightfold Path. So we want to realize the Noble Eightfold Path by following mindfulness. Mindfulness is the seventh step. When we follow mindfulness, I give another talk on how it leads to this in my next talk. When you follow mindfulness meditation, we naturally glide in to the right path, right direction. Never go wrong. As I said at the beginning, the direct path, right path is the practice of mindfulness. It will keep you on the track. That track will definitely lead you to that liberation from pain, suffering, sorrow, lamentation, grief, and despair. So, and the fifth purpose, of course, is Nibbanasa Sachikiriyaya, to realize, attain Nibbana. Friends, all this are humanly achievable. Buddha never said that anything, that never asked us to do anything that we cannot do. Buddha said, because I never ask you to do anything you cannot do. Why? Because he has done it. He was so compassionate, he said, just like, a child is you know, trying to walk, trying to climb a step. So mother sitting here and encourage the child, come on, you can do it, try, you can do it. So mother gives a push, encouragement. Then child trusting the mother. Mother tells the child, because mother has done it, she speaks to the child from her experience. So she gives encouragement, shows this child tries, for every word mother utters, gives him encouragement to lift his foot and climb. Finally, he climbs the step. Similarly, Buddha told us, bhikkhus, try this, do this, practice. I never ask you to do anything that you cannot do. I have done it. I have achieved it. You can do it. You know, if you a certain divine being comes and tell you, come on, do it, you cannot challenge him, because he's a divine. Here is the Buddha, human. He said, I am a human, I was very much like you. I have done it, and I came to this level. Buddhoham bodhisami muttoham moche parang. He said, I became Buddha to make you attain Buddhahood. I liberated, and I want to help you to liberate. So he did something that humanly possible, and therefore he asked us to do something that we can do. So attaining liberation, attaining Nibbana, getting rid of all our suffering, is not humanly impossible. That is possible. So this is the path, this is the method, and this is the achievement. For this fivefold purpose we practice meditation. These fivefold purposes are very lofty purpose, not very simple. Vipassana meditators must keep in mind, our purpose is to cleanse the mind, overcome sorrow and lamentation, overcome grief and despair, to tread the right path and attain liberation. Many people think attaining liberation is not for us. It's very big, lofty goal. Friends, it is lofty, no doubt, but anything lofty, anything huge can be achieved if we make constant, consistent, regular effort. This is not one time shot, one time practice. This is a practice we do every single day, all our life. And Buddha was so confident, he gave us a guarantee. You know, he gave us a guarantee. I put the guarantee from upside down. The least is for when he attained enlightenment, he surveyed the world and he saw the whole world is like a lotus, a pond full of lotus. Some lotuses are buried in the mud at the bottom of the lake. Some buds have come little out of mud, some a few inches. Some buds have come even further, little up. And some buds have come out of water and waiting for the sunlight to bloom. Similarly, he saw among human beings, there are some human beings who are ready. All they need is a very little guidance. Boom. attain enlightenment. Some need little more advice, encouragement, and prompting. They take little longer. And there are some others who need advice day and night, every day for many years, dragging them, hold them by their hand and drag them out, wake them up in the morning, get up, practice. They also attain. But there are others who, there's a beautiful Pali word for them. They are called Pada Parama. Pada, the first one is called Uggatitanya, second kind is called Vipanchitanya, third is called Nyaya, fourth is called Pada Parama. Beautiful Pali word if you understand the meaning of this word. Pada means words, Pada, like Dhamma Pada. Parama means paramount. They are best are words. They talk and talk and talk and discuss and discuss and discuss and write and write and write and go to this conference, that conference, this teacher, that teacher. They never practice. Their best is word. They like to talk. Like to talk. They like to write. Some people never sat for 1 second to meditate, but they write beautiful books on meditation. Beautiful books. Words. They like words. They are called Pada Parama. Remember this word. Pada Parama. 99.999 people are Pada Paramas. Pada Paramas. So, in the guarantee, Buddha said, he put the top at the bottom. That means those who attain enlightenment very quickly, he put at the bottom. I put on the top, just to, you know, make it so, to urge people. There have been many people in the time of the Buddha who, at the very first time they heard the Dhamma, attain enlightenment very quickly. They are called Uggatitanya. And others are slower and finally they attain. So, the first ones, one day a group, few monks came to the Buddha and said, Venerable Sir, if I live long enough to go round and collect my alms food and eat and live one more day to meditate, that would be plenty for me to attain liberation. Another monk said, Venerable Sir, if I have one half day to sit and meditate, I can attain enlightenment. Another monk said, Venerable Sir, if I live long enough to take one inhaling, one exhaling, that is enough for me to attain liberation. Buddha said, out of these three, this last one is the best. He is so enthusiastic, so determined, so committed, that he makes ardent effort and attain enlightenment. So, he gave the minimum, that much, and in Abhayaraja Kumara Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, Buddha said, because if I give instruction in the morning, very enthusiastic practitioner will attain enlightenment in the evening. And if I give instructions in the evening, this particular person with great enthusiasm will attain enlightenment next morning. In Mahasatipatthana Sutta, he said, if somebody practices very diligently, he can attain enlightenment in 7 days. Or if five fetters remain, he will attain the third level of enlightenment in 7 days. and he went up to 7 years. He started actually with 7 years and reduced to 7 days. So these days I think the lowest is the more attractive. When you buy something, they give you a guarantee for 1 month. If you pay a little more, you can extend this guarantee for 2 years, right? That is a normal commercial way of selling. And if you pay more, you can exchange it for 7 years. So I follow that system. So because this is practical, achievable and doable, so let us try to practice very diligently, never give up. Okay, this is enough for today's Dhamma talk. We have 7:30 to 8:30 questions and answer period. Then you can ask questions. Then we can have a discussion.